This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you want a chance to win tickets to the hockey game coming up this weekend, give us a call at 884-4870. You have a chance to win tickets to Michigan State and Michigan hockey. 884-4870. Right now, we're going to talk a little auto racing with our good friend Terry Fitzwater joining us. Terry, how you doing, buddy?
I'm not doing too bad, Earl. Yourself?
Hey, doing okay. As you know, we're in the middle of football season, but it looks like NASCAR is going to take a little bite out of football season for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's the biggest two weekends of the year for them as they come down to the last two races in the chase. They're Phoenix International Speedway this weekend, and then, of course, they crown their champion next week at Homestead down in Miami, and it's one of the great battles. I don't know if anything can top last year with, you know, Tony Stewart and Carl Edwards, but Jimmy Johnson and Michigan's very own Brad Keselowski, boy, they're fighting tooth and nail, and it's going to be a big weekend for both of them.
Yes, would you say Jimmy has the edge? I mean, since he's won five of them, would he have the edge going into these last two races?
Well, you got to give him an edge, certainly at Phoenix. You know, he's won there before. It's an intermediate track, and out of Jimmy Johnson's 60 wins in his career, 41 of them have come at an intermediate track. He's won at Phoenix four times. Now, Brad, who has a a little shorter career history there, he only has one top five finish and six starts. But the good news is, it was this in the spring race at Phoenix. So this year, he had his best finish ever. He finished fifth. But Brad's problem has been that during the chase, there's been some poor qualifying. And historically at Phoenix, he's not a top 10 qualifier. And many of his starts have been in the 20s. And he even had almost a 30th starting spot. So he needs to qualify better and he needs to finish better. And if history is any indication, Jimmy Johnson has the edge at Phoenix this week.
So he's well on his way to winning his sixth Sprint Car Cup Championship, isn't he?
Yeah, he's he's got a 7-point lead, two races to go. And if he wins it, it'll be a sixth. That'll put just one behind the legendary Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt Sr., who had the lead all time with seven championships apiece. So you know Jimmy Johnson can taste it. History's right in front of him. But don't count out Brad Keselowski. He going into the chase, he had the most wins on the Sprint Cup Series this year. He started off hot, and he's been competitive. He's improved at a lot of the tracks that he had not had good starts or good finishes earlier in the year to come on to finish second in Texas. So I look for Brad to be competitive, and Rusty Wallace says that he thinks that Brad not only is going to win in Phoenix, but he thinks he's going to win the whole championship.
Hey, Terry, do you think it's fair to compare what Jimmy Johnson has done to some of the old past champions like, Kyle Petty and those guys, the old ones? Because they didn't run it the way they run it today. So is that a fair comparison?
It is. Now, I think the one thing about racing in today's world, the competition, I think, across the board is tougher than it was, let's say, 30 years ago when Earnhardt was winning his championships or Richard Petty was winning his, because there were some top teams and then there were some guys who just showed up. You still have a little bit of that, but the consolidation of the teams and the uniformity and equipment, so where one little thing can separate a driver from winning a championship or being in the top 10 or not even finishing at all, it's a lot more competitive than it was in the past. So, to compare the eras, it's not fair. Richard Petty, he did one year he ran over, won over 20 races and he ran over 60 races that year. So, the eras are different, but championships are still, you know, that's what everybody counts. And how can you count out Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt for what they accomplished in their careers?
Yeah, that is definitely true. Hey, give us a call at Talk Sports with us right here on WKAR. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870, WKAR East Lansing. Hey, Terry, when we look at what Jimmy's done, and obviously he's been a very special driver and very special now, what can Brad Keselowski, does he have to maybe even just shore up some of the little things that he does or in his racing style, or he doesn't have to do anything really radical, does he?
Not really. Brad just needs to maintain this. Both drivers need to maintain their cool. I mean, it's down to the nitty-gritty, two races left. They don't. There's no room for error. Either of them have a bad race at Phoenix, and the championship goes to the other guy. And so they both have to maintain their cool and their composure. Jimmy Johnson's been trying to play head games with Brad by letting him know he's the championship and all the pressure is on Brad and all this. And it hasn't gotten to him yet. Keselowski's still there. And if you just look at the last race, it was Brad's race to win last week until the caution came out with five to go. And then Jimmy got a better restart. And then they finished 1-2. So they're racing like champions. They're racing for the title. And what they did at Texas was unbelievable when they're banging into each other. Everybody thought they were going to wreck, but both of them showed their true driving abilities as they, you know, they raced each other hard. And at the end, they just smiled and tipped their hats to each other and said, hey, I'll see you in Phoenix.
Now, how much money is on the line for the winner?
Oh, we're talking millions. It's, millions for the driver, for the team. You have Hendrick, who's won a number of championships, obviously, with Jimmy Johnson, and they won with Terry Labonte and Jeff Gordon. Roger Penske, who's won numerous Indy 500s and numerous championships in IndyCar, is still looking for his first title in NASCAR. So Hendrick has the experience. They have, you know, they're the top team that's out there. But I tell you what, Roger Penske is pulling out all the stops in the last two races. Even though they're driving Dodges this year and moving to Fords next year, they have built a car for Phoenix, and they have built another Dodge specifically set up to run at Homestead. So Penske's putting all his resources in. He wants the championship, and he's got the driver to pull it off. But he's got to do it against the greatest driver of our generation, and that's Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah. Now, Terry, you were telling me earlier how, you know, I guess the new track they've been, you know, they've redesigned and put everything else on it. Is that an advantage for either racer, or will that just basically come out as a wash for whoever's who's ever hot that day?
Well, normally I'd say it would be an advantage for Jimmy Johnson just because he's been around longer. He's seen a lot of different things over the years. But Brad Keselowski, he's driven in trucks. He's driven in Nationwide, and he actually one time was a teammate of Jimmy Johnson's way back when in 2007-2008, running for Junior Motorsports. So they were teammates at one time, but Brad Keselowski is still learning some of the stuff. He's only got a few races at Phoenix. So this new design where they've increased the banking and they repaved the track, I think you put the advantage and experience of Jimmy Johnson. But, you know, Brad, you know, he hasn't had any of those, you know, horrific crashes where, although he has had injuries before from crashes, but, you know, he still has that, you know, impetuousness of youth, the cockiness, and I don't think he's intimidated by the risk that this new track possesses. And I think he's just going to put the pedal to the metal, you know, he's going to go flat out and whatever happens, happens. And so, from a cockiness point of view, I think you give the edge to Keselowski. Experience obviously goes to Johnson.
Yes. Now, we know, you know, women have made great strides in auto racing, but do we have any saying, looking at next year, who are pointing who could be become a big factor of maybe finishing the top 10 next year?
As far as women goes, the only one that's really on the scene for cup racing is going to be Danica Patrick. She's had an abysmal year. There's rumors that after next year, you know, she may be losing the GoDaddy sponsorship. They're starting to downplay her. But, you know, Tony Stewart is a smart guy. He sees something in her ability. It's more than just being able to get sponsors. And Tony's sticking with her and going to put her in cup next year. And that's a big investment and a big risk at his part, but he's sticking to it. So next year we're going to find out just how well a full-time female driver on the circuit can do in today's NASCAR world. And, you know, Danica, she's had a couple races where she looked like she might have been a little competitive, and then she fell off at the end. She doesn't handle adversity well, and I don't think she's earned the respect of all the other drivers out there yet. Going to have to do that next year if she wants to finish in the top 10, that's for sure, because they're not going to cut her any slack.
I know we talked earlier about how difficult it is for young men for young drivers who haven't been driving that long, or maybe have been driving a while, but to get in the races. Is it still difficult, or will we see maybe a few more young drivers call it getting their stripes next year?
Well, you know, I think you'll see a couple guys start moving up, but, you know, it's not just that they're good drivers, you have to be, but it's also some of the pedigree that they bring to the sport. The Dillon boys, they're the grandsons of Richard Childress, who owned Dale Earnhardt's car before. He's the team owner for Kevin Harvick. They've been running through the trucks and nationwide, and you're going to see those guys moving up through the ranks. They're going to get good equipment. They've proven they can drive. They won some championships. So I think for the young guys coming into the sport, look for the Dillon brothers to start making their impact starting next year.
Okay. And that's good because we always need new blood, in sports. And that's the good that you'll be able to get a few new players in auto racing. And what about, when we look at the youngsters and the young players, I know we talked about before about the racing on the truck scene and such. Will those races, will the sponsors always cover those races, or do you see maybe a time when they're going to have a very difficult time raising money and keeping those races alive?
Well, I think the truck series is still in pretty good hands, and in fact, this has not been officially announced, and it's the worst kept rumor in all of racing that next year at Tony Stewart's dirt track at Eldora Speedway, the trucks are going to race on dirt for the first time at Tony Stewart's track down there, the legendary Eldora Speedway. So there's venues for the series, and there's plenty of sponsorships still available for the trucks. But if you look at the amount of money coming into the sport and the amount of money that it costs to run, finding those title sponsorships are tougher and tougher. Look at Jeff Gordon, who had the DuPont sponsorship for years. It was a great marriage. And now this year, he's got part-time sponsors, you know, to drive to End Hunger. There's not a full-time, 36 race sponsor on that car. Now, you've got a four-time champion who is always in the top 5 to 10 in points, and you can't find the sponsor. And he's great with sponsors, great for charity, and you can't find the sponsorship for that car. That says that the world and the economy is getting a little bit tighter, and I don't expect to see all the money that's been pouring into the sport over the years. We've seen it start to slow down, and I think that's going to continue until the national economy picks back up again.
Yes, Terry, that could definitely be a problem for the sports world. There's only so many dollars that you can split up. We know this football, we have basketball, baseball. Maybe we'll have hockey eventually, but there's only so many dollars for all these teams to split up, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you look at what the NFL is trying to do. Mm-hmm. You know, they're already talking about a franchise possibly in London because they think that the amount of money for sports merchandising and marketing and sponsorship in the United States is maybe saturated. So they're looking to grow the NFL into Europe so they can get more money out of what they see as an unlimited supply of funds, because the only thing that's really over there that's really taking a lot of money is soccer. So the NFL is looking to capture the money that the NBA has already done worldwide. NASCAR, they've gone to Mexico City with the Nationwide Series, or in Montreal. So they're starting to look along those lines, too. How do they get more money internationally into the sport but still keep it of interest to the people in the United States to be a homegrown business, from the South?
Okay. Hey, Terry, it's good talking with you, my friend, and I'll have to talk with you a little bit more the next time. We'll talk a little bit more as auto racing is changing, just like all the sports in our country is changing. But hey, it's good talking with you, Terry, and we'll get in touch with you in the near future.
All right, sounds good, Earl, and to all your listeners, have a good week. Thank you.
Okay,
bye now.
Thank you. Yep, bye-bye. The time now is 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
For political junkies, this is Christmas morning. Results to unwrap, demographics to deconstruct, surprises to savor. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us at the end of the road to 270. What happened, where, who voted, and why, and what comes next? Join us for a post-election edition of The Political Junkie, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, and thanks for listening. Here's our weather forecast for the next few days for mid-Michigan. Partly sunny today, a high around 47 degrees. Overnight tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the upper 20s. Mostly sunny for Thursday, highs tomorrow in the upper 40s. And Friday's forecast, mostly sunny skies with highs in the lower 50s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to talk a little basketball with the head coach of East Lansing High School, Steve Finnemore. We're going to talk about the upcoming prep season here in the mid-Michigan area. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Earl, I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on. I just want to know if you and Jack Ebling are heading over to Germany.
Jack might be. I can't head over there. I don't have the bucks.
I know, and not only that, you have to brush up on your German also.
Yes, I would. Hey, Steve, but when you look at the upcoming season, and I know you've practiced well, you know, you were attending a lot of tournaments during the summer. How do you figure all the tournaments and the things you do during the summer, how does that help you in the fall now that fall practice is getting ready to get started?
I think the first thing, Earl, is the camaraderie that it helps with, because now we're going to have guys who play on the JV team last season, and we're going to implement them with our senior class now, who were juniors last year. And obviously, it gives them a chance to you know, get used to each other, Earl, on the court in workouts and conditioning, strength training. And we also, the second thing is we see what we've lost with our seniors from last year. So you look for guys who can fill in those slots, who are going to be the leaders. And thirdly, Earl, you look at the guys who have progressed. Unfortunately, basketball has become a 365-day-a-year sport now, where you really got to work on your game all year round. So probably those three things are a little biggest.
Now, what about for kids who want to come out, who haven't, you know, they've been playing just in the gyms and such, but they haven't never played on a team. I know you get a few of those every year, don't you? How does that work out for those guys?
Yeah, Earl, I'm at the freshman level in ninth grade, we usually get the most kids to try out. We probably get about anywhere between 35 and 40 kids. And then at the JV level, it tails off a little bit, probably to about 20, 25 kids. And then Earl, by a kid's sophomore, junior year, they finally see the light, whether they're going to play varsity, whether they're going to go on to college or not. So our numbers really, really go down. Earl, I haven't had more than 18, 19 kids try out for the varsity team since I've been there. This year we're expecting about 18 kids. And, you know, Earl, if you played on the JV team last year, you're going to be a junior now. You got a pretty decent chance to make the varsity. That is, if you played over the summer and worked hard in your game. Earl, some kids, they get to a point where they don't want to play high school sports anymore. They want to concentrate on studies. They want to go to college and just be a normal student.
Yeah, yes, I know we run into those from time to time over the year, because some kids, they just get sort of burned out on sports, don't they?
They really do, Earl. You know, there's a lot of kids playing different sports all year round, and Earl, I'm at the point now, whatever a kid wants to do, that is fine with me. You know, before I mentioned it's an all-year-round sport, but you know what? There are a lot of great athletes out there, like a Javon Haynes, who can play a couple of different sports at a time. We also have soccer players, and we have baseball players, and I like using those guys. They bring a lot to the table, so it's definitely different, Earl.
Yes, and of course, when you talk about Haynes, he's got a great chance. He's a very good football player, and you'll probably have to help him, just like the football coach, Bill Ferraco, probably have to help him decide on which way he wants to go, and you know, and what you know, what schools he wants to look at, whether it be football or basketball.
Yeah, I think Jovan's the type of kid where he's almost like a late bloomer. You know, he works really hard at it. He's really matured this year. I'm really proud of him because he's probably made the biggest strides out of any athlete I've seen in 3 years at East Lansing. This is going to be his third year with me on the varsity. We're looking for big things from him this season. You know, obviously he had a great season for Coach Ferraco, and Coach Ferraco has done a tremendous job with him. And I'm really looking forward to coaching Jovan in his senior year.
Yes, and Steve, when you look at the talent around the conference, how would you see the conference shaping up this year?
Well, Earl, you got to stop and you got to look at Sexton, the defending state champions. You know, they won our conference last year. They didn't lose a game. But with that being said, they've lost a lot from last year. They lost all their top perimeter players, their backcourt. You know, they lost Denzel, they lost Anthony Clemens and Brent Forbes. Now, they still have two very good players coming back in Trevor Manuel and the other big kid, Jalen Hayes. So they're going to be tough up front. They're going to be very big. And they also have a transfer from Jackson, who's a very good guard, Jeremy Williamson. So they're going to be tough. And then I think it's wide open. You know, Eastern's going to be very good with Brian Morton. Holt is going to be very good with the Jackson kid and Colin Jones. And they're well coached at Holt. Jackson will be very good despite losing their coach, Ramsey Nichols. And, of course, you got to throw us in the mix, too. So I think it's wide open for the top, Earl, but Sexton I would lean a little too at being the favorite because of the two big guys.
How would you just say basketball is? I know you had a chance to watch most of the teams over the summer. How do you think basketball in general is going to do in the mid-Michigan area this year?
Well, Earl, I always read what people write about us, you know, our team, our league, the mid-Michigan area. There's still a lot of fine basketball players in the area. You know, Pawama Westphalia has a very good player in Nick Spitzley, and a lot of people don't really know about him, but they will be hearing about him this year. You know, we have Jovan Haynes, obviously, and Eastern has Brian Morton, who's a very good player. And then, obviously, I spoke of the kids from Sexton and Holt. I think it's going to be solid, Earl, but the one thing we did lose, we lost a lot of good seniors from last year. You know, you start with Chris Harrison Docks, who's going to Butler. You know, Cha-Cha Tucker, who wasn't a senior, he just transferred schools. We lost Tracy Edmond, Frederick Emmons. So it's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be worse or better, but it's definitely still going to be watchable.
Yes, and we know that basketball in the mid-Michigan area has been pretty strong over the last few years. Hopefully it'll continue being just as strong as it's been. Do you believe it will be that strong? I get a chance to watch the team during the summer out at Coach Izzo's shootout. When you look at the team and a lot of those teams you're going to be playing against, as well as people get a chance to evaluate some of the other teams, how do you see it when you go to a camp like that and you get a chance to see the other teams? You know, they'll have some of the teams will be with them in the fall, but a lot of them, they'll have different players that they may be at other schools and such, or they're not with the school that they're playing with during the summer.
And that's an interesting thing, Earl. I would never use a kid in the summertime that I knew wasn't going to be with us in the winter. You know, unless you have a situation where the kid decides to transfer after he played with you, or if a kid transfers in, or they say he's going to be transferring to your school, you really can't police it in the summertime, you know, who plays with who. You know, Eastern won the championship up at Tom Izzo shootout, but obviously Cha-Cha won't be with them this year. You definitely don't scout the other teams. I mean, you'll watch them for a few minutes, and you really can't put too much stock into it because it's the end of June, middle of June, and you're still 6, 7, 8 months away from the season. So it's fun seeing all the teams around. You know, I think Tom Izzo does a great job with that shootout. It seems like there's always a lot of teams, a lot of fans up there watching. And obviously Coach Izzo brings in their recruits. So it's tough to really get a gauge on it, Earl, to tell you the truth.
Okay. Hey, Steve, when you get ready to go out and look at your opposition this fall, I know you'll be scouting the other teams you're going to play the week before you play them. Has that changed much, the way you scout teams over these past years, or have you refined it, or do you do more film work? How has scouting changed and how you look at other teams these days?
Well, you know, every coach girl has their own philosophy when it comes to advanced scouting. And I learned from the best. I learned from Tom Crean and Tom Izzo when it comes to advanced scouting. You know, Doug Hernis showed me a few things when I was up there at Michigan State. I really try to get out and see the other teams. You know, there are some coaches that bring a video camera with them, and they'll come to your game or have someone go to your game and film the game. I don't give our players too much information on the opposing team. I myself want to know what's going to happen during the games, and we may go over, like say we're playing Okemos on a Friday night. The day before on Thursday, we may go over their personnel a little bit. But, Earl, you know what? A lot of these kids know each other. They know their games. So the only thing you really want to do is you want to have your guys ready and never, ever, ever underestimate the opponent.
Yes. Now, Steve, as you know, a lot of kids, they don't like to watch a lot of film. A lot of them just rather get out there and play. As you know, even when they get to college, they still have a somewhat of a disdain for film work. Do you see that changing at all, or were kids almost always, you're going to have to, you know, get on them to watch a film of the opponents from time to time?
You know, my first year we didn't watch any film. We were 17-4. Last year we watched some film. We were 15-6. We're going to watch more film this year, and my guys don't know it. But what I do is, Earl, I don't throw it all at them in one session. I think we're going to break it up, maybe watch 10 to 15 minutes after each practice of the upcoming opponent. What I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try one of our managers to film our practices, because not only, you know, will it help you watching the opponent, but it'll help yourself. And you know what it is, though? You're sitting there in a classroom. You got to make sure the guys are paying attention. So you kind of stop it every now and then to point out some mistakes, point out some good things. Earl, I'll tell you, I'll be honest. I've learned a lot about the game of basketball from watching film. I watch games in the summertime at night in my basement. I think every player and every coach should watch film.
Now, Steve, how much, if you watch Michigan State play this weekend, their opening game, do you get much out of these opening games, or do you get much out of the college game, or do you refer anything to your team, the high school kids, about watching the college games and what they should look for in the college games?
I think the first thing, Earl, is the energy and the motivation level that the players possess, because the first few weeks they've been playing against each other, then they have one or two exhibition games, you know, against some Division II schools, maybe an NAIA school. Now, I tell you what, we've known Tom Izzo for a long time. He won't fear anyone. He'll play anyone, anywhere. And to open up with UConn and then Kansas a few days later really says a lot about Michigan State. And, Earl, you want to play the best. And in the beginning, from game one to game 30 or game 35, you know, your object, Earl, is to get better. And coaches will probably want to see, you know, which combinations work best, who's picking up the plays in practice. You know, we open up at Battle Creek Lakeview the first game, and then we go right into our league play. So against Battle Creek Lakeview, I'm hoping that our guys are ready in the first game.
Yes, because you won't be able to see everything, and you'll probably have to just do a lot of switching and seeing if you can come up with the right combination. I know you have all that in what you've done in practice, but, of course, it's nothing like playing in the games and getting that game experience, is it?
You know, there really isn't. It's just, you know, I equate, you know, sports, you know, with practicing games to, like, performers on Broadway or on the, you know, on the big screen. You know, you practice it, you rehearse it, and you just don't know what that actor or actress is going to do, you know, on performance night. You just don't know. And the one thing, Earl, I think a lot of fans and even media and parents, I think we really, really need to evaluate our thinking when it comes to these athletes. I've been guilty of it. We're all guilty of criticizing athletes when they miss a layup, when they strike out. You know, we saw the New York Yankees against the Tigers, you know, have a poor batting average. These kids, Earl, they're teenagers. They're going to make mistakes. I'm guilty of it. I get on them a lot, you know, because you get so frustrated sometimes. But you know what? They're going to make mistakes. They're not going to perform to the best of their ability. But, Earl, the one thing they can control is their attitude and their energy.
Yes, now, Steve, that's one thing I've seen over the years, that I try to control myself from getting upset at kids and such. But, you know, when we watch games, a lot of times what gets under my collar and skin is that so too many of us compare what we see high school kids and college kids to what the pros do. They'll be talking about, I have to remind them all the time, hey, they're not professionals. They're not getting out there getting paid. They're not playing at the highest level. But for whatever reason, it seems like we think that the high school kids should be able to do the same things that the college kids and the pros do.
I know it, Earl. You know what we can really teach our kids to help them down the road? We can help them to be great teammates, and that's my number one goal this year. We have our first meeting today at 3:15 after school, and we're going to have the freshman JV and varsity players there. We're going to emphasize being a great teammate. Because, Earl, you know, in life, as you know, you need help, and you got to help others out. So the one thing we're going to try to teach, now listen, everyone can't get a college scholarship in basketball because there's so far and few, you know, in between. So, look, we all want to win. We all want to score a lot of points and get our name in the newspaper and have our son as the best player on the team. But you know what, Earl? I'd rather have a great teammate than one individual or two individuals doing all the scoring.
Yes, that would be nice. But like you say, though, it seems like everybody – it's funny how everybody thinks they can score or they can be the highest scorer or the team scorer. Everyone thinks they can really shoot the ball, don't they?
Oh, they really do. And I'll tell you what, I know he gets beat up a lot, and I actually call him a human punching bag. You know, you look at a guy like LeBron James, Earl. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who everyone's been going after, but they kind of seem to come around now. You know, people don't realize LeBron James averages 7 assists a game. I mean, you got to take a step back and think about that. You know, he made a beautiful pass to Ray Allen the other night because he was wide open in the corner. Allen hit a 3 to win the game. I've heard people criticize LeBron James for not taking the last shot, for passing the ball up. LeBron James is a great teammate, and he's a great player to emulate.
Oh, yes, he is. That's for sure. And yeah, so many people criticize him just because he doesn't take the last shot all the time. I say, so what? I mean, he's setting up his teammates, which is also part of the job of being on a team. You set up so you don't be selfish. It's funny how I think so many people are so selfish and they think that LeBron James should take all the shots or whoever on whatever team. That person should take all the shots. They shouldn't pass the ball to someone that's open. I say, hey, if someone's open, I think you're crazy not to get them the ball.
You got to give it to him, especially if it's a guy like Ray Allen who's wide open in the corner. You know, Michael Jordan did it many times. Of course, he's made many great shots, but he also hit the open man quite often. And that's what we want our guys to do. But when you watch us play, we share the ball. And the thing that makes it easy for these guys, though, you know, I've told you before in the past, everyone has a green light to shoot the ball. So your turn's going to come. Just make sure you give the ball up when someone's open.
Oh, that's for sure. Hey, Steve, I want to thank you all for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and get a little heads up on the upcoming season. It's going to be another dogfight. It just seems like basketball right now is really hot in the mid-Michigan area, though, isn't it?
It really is, Earl. I'm excited to be in this league, and I'm really looking forward to our third year. All our coaches are going to work a little harder this year. Our kids are going to work a little harder. And I'm going to get on Jack Ebling when I see him because I'm disappointed that him and you are not going out to Germany.
Well, you could try. Jack's got the big bucks, so he might get there.
Hey, I saw Joe Rex wrote about an hour ago getting on the bus downtown East Lansing to head to the airport. He said it out there.
Yeah, the Free Press. He's working for the Free Press now. So,
big time. Yeah. All right, thanks a lot, buddy.
Okay, thanks a lot, Steve, and we'll talk to you later, my friend.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Steve Fenimore talking sports with us right here on AM 870, 39 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
On Election Day, voters choose a chief executive, decide control of the legislative branch, and in many places they also make law. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us on the crucial races for the House and Senate and hundreds of ballot measures from gay marriage to medical marijuana to taxes and health care. I'm Neil Conan, Winners and Losers 2012. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, and thanks for listening today. Here's the weather forecast for mid-Michigan. Partly sunny skies today, high around 47 degrees. Overnight, it'll be partly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. A mostly sunny day for Thursday with highs in the upper 40s. And Friday's outlook, mostly sunny skies, will have highs in the lower 50s.
and give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Now we're going to turn our attention and talk a little bit of college basketball and with our good friend out of Detroit. And get a look at this preview. If you saw the Detroit Free Press today, you had a chance to read Perry Farrell, preview of the University of Detroit. And we'll talk to Perry about U of D and some of the other teams in the Detroit area. Hey, Perry, how you doing, buddy?
Earl the Pearl Robinson, what's up, man?
Hey, not too much. Just want to talk a little. As you know, college basketball season now is right upon us. We've all been, head immersed so much in football. Now that football is starting to fade away, I guess it's time to turn our attention to basketball.
Should be a good year for Michigan, Michigan State. OpenU might be okay. Some good teams in the state this year.
Yeah. Now, how good do you think U of D will be this year?
I think a lot of that has to depend on the younger guys. They got two junior college transfers from Lagos, Nigeria. One is 6'10", one is 6'11". Extremely raw right now. They'll be able to score, but they're going to need one of those big guys to come in and help with rebounding and block shots. You got to replace LaMarcus Lowe and Eli Holman, two guys who were able to do that. So now a lot of their scoring will come from Doug Anderson, Nick Minaraff, Ray McCallum, and Jason Calise. So they got potential to be a really good team. They need some depth on the bench.
Yes, and it's really amazing how far Oakland University has come in the years. I mean, it always was like Division II for a while, and when they got to Division I, people didn't think much of them. But they've really rose in the ranks, aren't they? They're really a pretty good university these days.
Yeah, they want to become a part of the Rising League. And previously, I guess there was some friction between Oakland and Detroit as far as Oakland being able to be admitted into the conference. And somebody told me something that was real interesting. Oakland U probably has more to offer than Detroit Mercy because they're building new dorms. It's the facilities are probably better. So I can see why Detroit wouldn't want OU in the conference with them, because from a competitive standpoint, their facilities look a lot better. And it's probably a little more stable right now at Oakland U with Campy and the athletic department than it is at U of D, who's looking for an athletic director and, got some issues going on in their department.
Yes, sir. When you look at the two schools, it's almost like a night and day, like you say, with all the troubles that U of D has been having. And Oakland's been just a smooth ship sailing and just building their program.
Consistency, Campy's been there since we were born.
Yeah.
He gets decent players. He's got Tommy McCoon from Saginaw who transferred in from West Virginia. Campy's a tough dude, but I think he's a fair guy. So I can see where consistently he'll have a program that'll be competitive in the Summit League. And even if they move to the Horizon, they'll give him a larger base to recruit from because it's more TV, more exposure, which Oakland U would probably thrive in.
Yes, I mean, that's one thing, Perry, that we can say about Oakland. We've seen them over the years, and Campy has always played a tough schedule, and sometimes he even beats some of these teams, even though he plays a very grueling schedule.
I was there when they beat St. Tennessee at their place a couple years ago. He gets good players, good shooters. His system never changes, and he tries to get guys to fit into that role. So I give Campy a lot of credit. He's remained viable for a lot of years, and he's put some good teams out there. He doesn't worry about wins and losses, just getting better as the season progresses.
Yes, and he's a mind the Mid-Michigan area. He did very well in the Mid-Michigan area getting kids. He's got one of the Valentines there. He's got Travis Bader there. So he's done a good job in recruiting kids and getting the better kids out of the Mid-Michigan area.
Yeah, he's got a kid, Corey Petros, who's 6'10". He's got Drew Valentine, Denzel's brother. He's got Bader, who's a good shooter. So, and then the Hamilton kid graduated last year, who's the leading scorer in the Summer League. So he gets good talent, and teams, they respect him, and players seem to like to play for him.
Yes. Now, when you look around the rest of the city of Detroit, and, of course, I know we have the MAC. The MAC, for whatever reason, they just haven't been as strong for Eastern, Western, and Central over the years. What do you think has been the problem? Why haven't the MAC teams been able to develop or get pretty good players?
Well, Hawkins, he's lost players who've come in there for a couple years at Western and transferred. Kalamazoo's not the most glamorous place to be in the world. the problem at Central is you brought in Ernie Ziegler.
Yeah.
You brought in a lot of kids from everywhere else. There was really no emotional attachment to the school. And they just threw a lot of guys out there to see who would stick, and it didn't work. So now they got Keno Davis, Tom Davis's son, who will probably do a good job in a couple years. But right now he doesn't have the talent. And Eastern, you know, Rob Murphy had a good year last year. He tried to leave. The only reason he didn't leave because he would have had to pay $200,000 to Eastern to leave to go to the Orlando Magic. So my thing is now, what do you tell kids? You're going to be here for a while? Are you going to leave at the next job when you don't have to do that payout? So out of the three, I think Eastern will be the better team this year. They got DeShonte Riley, who he's a big player. He's not necessarily a good player, but they got a lot of depth. And I think Eastern will probably break through and be one of the better teams this year. Plus, you know, Earl, MAC schools have great players, man.
They
have
do.
Some good teams at Ohio U. You know, Akron's been decent. And if you don't keep up, it's just like football. If you don't keep up with what's the trend in MAC football, you have to be able to score. That's why Central, Western, and Eastern are having bad years. And in MAC basketball, you got to be able to have some guys out there who can put the ball in the basket. And for the last 3 years, Central, Western, and Eastern have been able to do that.
Yes, that's true. In our area, when we look at it, that looks like we're always talking. I'm always talking to people who say, what's wrong with the MAC? What's wrong with the MAC? Well, you just outlined it there. You know, they just haven't been able to sustain excellence or these just teams that can be a good team, a contributing team, and maybe get them in the NC2A. I mean, it's weird to say, but the MACs have not made a good showing in the tournament, haven't even got to the tournament for the most part.
Well, you're not talking about Ohio U, who beat Michigan
last year
and made it to the, I think, the Great Eight. So
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the MAC. It's the MAC schools that's in the state of Michigan. That's the problem,
Eastern,
Central, and Western. But these other programs in the MAC, I mean, Ohio U beat Michigan last year in the tournament.
MAC
has great players, and Central, Western, and Eastern just haven't done a good job of keeping up in football or basketball, their marquee sports.
Yeah, why don't you think they've been able to keep up or at least get there? I mean, I know we were at the Central game a little while ago when the Central was playing Michigan State, but what do you think is happening in the MAC where these guys just playing aren't getting some of the better talent for the sports?
Well, I think in Eastern's case, it's just hard to recruit under the shadow of Ann Arbor. And Coach Francis has done as good a job as he can. I thought this year they'd make strides because of what they did in the last year, but once again, I think they're one or two wins. They play a tough schedule, and they just don't have the talent. And a lot of the kids who don't stay and go to Michigan State, they choose to go out of state. And those are the kids that Eastern, Western, and Central aren't able to get. Central Michigan, it looks like they're going for their third straight season of 3-9. And Dan Enos, he's done a decent job recruiting, but obviously he's not doing a good job coaching. And supposedly his job is not in jeopardy for this year, but I mean, if he wins another three games for the third straight year, I would think at some point you got to reexamine where you're at. And Western, I think Bill Cuba's just having a down year. They made a bowl game last year, and out of the three programs, Western's probably more stable. Bill's been around a long time, and I think they'll rebound after one bad year this year. But like I said, in MAC football, you got to be able to score. And in MAC basketball, you got to be able to get some guys out there who are able to compete at a high level, and they do other than at Central, Western, and Eastern.
Yeah, we know we saw last night, we saw Toledo get upset. They'd only had one loss, one game, but Ball State handled them last night. And so now, you know, Eastern will probably drop. I mean, Toledo will probably drop out of the top 25, but that's really is a quality program.
Yeah, and Toledo's a great program, and I was really surprised that that they got beat by Ball State. I saw Northern Illinois on TV, a great team. They just destroyed Western. And Miami, Ohio U is a good team, and so they beat Penn State at Penn State. And Miami of Ohio is not bad. So it's great football in the MAC. You have to be able to bring it. And you got guys in the NFL now, and Antonio Brown at the Steelers. You got the Allen guy, I think, at Green Bay. Cullen Jenkins, a Central grad.
Mm-hmm.
You got great talent in the MAC. Defensive line, receivers, and quarterbacks. Roethlisberger. I mean, you got some great players in the league from the MAC.
Yes, we do. And, you know, because we want to talk a little bit more basketball because with the MAC, it's still a lot of basketball, good, strong basketball players in the Midwestern area. We know there's been a lot of movement. A lot of kids have moved out of the state. But basketball is still one of the few sports that stays relatively strong in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, and I think this year, like I said, I think Michigan and Michigan State both have good teams. I'm interested to see how Gary Harris plays, the freshman from Indiana, how Denzel fits in, Valentine at the point guard or shooting guard position. And at Michigan, a lot of optimism. You got Glenn Robinson III, Trey Burke came back, Tim Hardaway Jr., Mitch McGarry. It's exciting to have both schools have really top 15, top 20 programs, and it should be two hotly contested games when they play each other.
Yes, they should. And, yes, I know we'll have to. We're all waiting to say that, but especially with Michigan. I mean, as you know, they were down for so long, and now they're back, and it looks like they're going to be strong and be very competitive in the Big Ten. They've been highly ranked all during the preseason, and it looks like Michigan should be just as strong as they used to be.
Listen, this Robinson kid is going to be very good. Spike Albrecht, the freshman point guard, will be able to come in and be functional at the point guard. And Nick Stenekis, the kid from Canada, can really shoot the ball. So they're probably as talented as they've been in about 10 years. So it'll be interesting to see. And the freshmen are going to play a lot because they're that talented. This kid from Ohio that went to Ohio U and decommitted, Chris Laveret, is going to be a great player. He's 6'5 and can shoot it. So it'll be fun to see both teams compete because I think with Indiana, Michigan, Michigan State, there's going to be some good basketball in the Big Ten issue.
Yes. Hey, Terry, do you get a chance to watch or scout many of the smaller teams in the state? We know they don't get a ton of publicity, so you get a chance to scout many of those teams?
Man, I barely have time to take a nap. I don't know about the Grand Valleys and the Hillsdales, but I know those teams usually have pretty good basketball, so I'm not going to sit here and say I know a lot about them, but basically it's Central, Western, Eastern, Michigan, and Michigan State.
Okay. And they should be strong this year in basketball and football. Well, for Michigan State, as you know, they've had a lot of troubles this year. They haven't been able to close out and win the close games, but they've been a pretty good team for the most part. They just can't win the close games. I know there are some years, this is one of those years for Michigan State because we saw them win a lot of close games those last 2 years of the 11-win season. But this year, it's like evening out. They gotta pay some of those debts back from winning all those other close games.
Yeah, but you can't let Taylor Martinez run crazy like that on you, and you can't give up. I don't think they've given up two touchdowns in the fourth quarter all year, have they?
I mean,
it was amazing to see that happen because I thought they would beat Nebraska, which set up Michigan to win the Legends division, but I don't think that's going to happen now. So it was really disappointing to see how the defense – and the defense has been great all year.
Right.
The offense has struggled. And the defense had their one bad game Saturday, and it cost them really a lot.
Yeah,
as far as bowl and getting to 8 wins.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, yes, that's the one thing about football. You know, one game can change everything. I mean, you know, because we heap a lot of praise on the teams when they do well. But, boy, when they lose one, you know, they have to take a lot of ridicule too, don't they?
Yeah, and I think two back-to-back 11-win seasons, I think people thought State had reached a certain plateau with a great team coming back in William Golston, who I think will declare for the draft after this year. Bulla, Marcus Rush, just a great defense. And they've had some really tough breaks. You know, Notre Dame game, tough break. They were right there with Ohio State. And it's just one of those things. Sometimes it's that kind of year where a lot of that stuff happens.
Yes, and, you know, we've seen guys leave early before, and William Gomes is one. We might see a couple more leave this year. We saw a couple leave last year. I've always thought it behooves the players to get out. Don't spend that extra year. You need to probably get out and get a chance if you want, if that's your intention, to make pro, go pro, get in the pro league and make as much money as you can.
I saw the Marcus Lattimore injury,
mm-hmm.
And I said, oh,
yeah.
My God, and you go to school to better your financial situation, and once that is in place and you can see clearly where you could go at, then you might as well just go. I used to say stay in school.
Yeah.
But now, especially in football, you know, when the situation is there to make money, you just have to go for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think you do that. You have to go for it. And a lot of these guys, they don't. We know basketball. They definitely if they have a good year, they're gone.
Right. Yeah. One and done. Football, you're one hit, one significant concussion from being done. So you might as well get the money where you can get it, because it's not always going to be there, especially with NFL players.
Oh, that's for sure. Hey, Terry, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we're going to have to keep in touch a lot more with the upcoming season and talk a little bit more basketball. Hopefully Detroit and Oakland University will both have good years, and we'll be talking about them from time to time, buddy.
I got a book coming out in March.
Oh, okay.
You can pump it for me.
Okay. What's the name of the book?
A collection of locker room stories from the Pistons.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be back on in March.
Okay,
wrap it up for me.
Okay, well, we'll do that. We'll talk about it. You know, people love to hear those locker room stories because, as you know, most of us don't get a chance to get in the locker rooms and hear those stories. I know you're there in a lot of games, so you get a chance to hear those guys talk a lot of stuff.
I'll share the information.
Okay.
All right, Earl.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Terry. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that's Perry Farrell talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR and talking sports. So if you want to do these books coming out in March, as he says, that'll be Perry Farrell. And he covers a lot of sports down in the mid-Michigan area in Detroit. And we'll talk more sports with Perry during the season. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. You know, we want you to help us spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR in East Lansing. And that's some of the things that we want to talk to you about, covering sports and knowing, looking at the different teams and such. And we know you love your sports, that's for sure. And we love that you love sports, because that keeps us around here at WKAR. And we want to appreciate everything you've done for us. And thank you right here in the Mid-Michigan area for what you've done for us here at WKAR. And the time is about 3 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock, and let's bring in Aaron and talk a little bit of Aaron. Aaron, have you heard Perry talk about the University of Detroit and Oakland University? Two good universities that have very fine basketball programs, and we'll probably see some pretty good basketball. I know Michigan State is playing Oakland this year, so that should be a pretty good game.
Yeah, I mean, it usually is, and I believe, what was it, Oakland or Detroit last year that Oakland got in the 64-team tournament, right?
I think Detroit did
Detroit
last year.
Was, yeah, Detroit. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully, I mean, that's pretty good if you think about it. You know, for Detroit to get into that was pretty good. They unfortunately didn't go for them well in the first round, but, you know, they have some luck on their side, but didn't go their way. So, yeah, you're right. Michigan State plays Oakland this year, and it's, you know, Oakland's got a good program, considering, you know, the size of the program, and so does U of D. So, I mean, it's good basketball all around down there and up mm-hmm. here. And, you know, Michigan State and Michigan are highly ranked teams this year. So, I mean, you know, if you're a basketball fan in the Michigan area, you got lots of choices.
And it'll be interesting seeing the two Valentine brothers playing up against each other, Denzel at Oakland. And, of course, Denzel here and the other are two Valentines, one here, one at Oakland, one at U of D, I mean, one at Michigan State. So it'll be interesting to see the two guys go against each other.
Yeah, that's always a fun time if you got to play against your brothers. So, you know, I'm sure for them it's probably a thrill, but, you know, also at the same time, I'm sure there's some sort of competitive factor to it. So I'm sure, you know, growing up, they, you know, I'm sure one person will say, hey, I'm a little bit better than you, and the other one, I think I'm a little bit better than you. But now here's their chance, whether or not they actually play against each other. I'm not sure, you know, who starts, that kind of thing. But, it's a good rivalry, nonetheless, between them two.
Yes, and, of course, the dad who used to play at Michigan State, Carlton, will be there to watch his two sons play. It's got to be got to be pretty hectic for him, sitting in the stands and watching his two sons go at it.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. It's an easy thing for a father to sit there and, well, who do I root for? I don't know. I can't root for both. He's got to pick one.
It should be fun. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening today, and thank you for calling. We invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on WKAR. And we want you to come back and join us tomorrow right here. Spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on WKAR. So come back and join us tomorrow. We want you to have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. And I'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.